Welcome to Sarah Health Radio with Dr. Sarah Rosenthal. All comments, views, and opinions expressed are solely those of the host, guest, and callers. In the next hour, Dr. Rosenthal and her guests cover both the common and the not-so-common health issues you want and need to know. Get your pencils ready. Here's your host, Dr. Sarah Rosenthal.
Hello, welcome to Sarah Health with Dr. Sarah Rosenthal, the program that reminds anyone coping with health problems we are not alone. The goal of this program is to discuss both common and not-so-common health issues with the experts who really know what they're talking about. I'm Dr. Sarah Rosenthal, your host. I have a long career as a medical journalist and am the author of over 30 consumer health books. I have a PhD in medical ethics and medical sociology, and I direct the program for bioethics and patients' rights at the University of Kentucky. Today, we are devoting our show to the subject of type 2 diabetes in women. This is the type of diabetes once called, quote, adult onset diabetes, unquote, or non-insulin-dependent diabetes mellitus, also shortened to NIDDM. Our guest today is Dr. Elena Christofides, a name that, in fact, rhymes with diabetes. She is an endocrinologist in private practice in Columbus, Ohio, who is also vice president of the Ohio Valley chapter of the American Association of Clinical Endocrinologists. Dr. Christofides, hello once again.
Thank you, Sarah. Thank you.
Diabetes is a particular specialty of yours, and given the vast understanding of women's hormonal issues, or your vast understanding of women's hormonal issues, we're delighted to have you discuss type 2 diabetes in women. The first place I'd like to start is in clearing up the definition of type 2 diabetes. I've noted that this disease has had several labels since the days of our grandparents that many women seem to be confused by, and I think that just helping people understand the terminology might be a good starting point.
Well, thank you, Sarah, and that you're absolutely right. We do need to clear some of the terminology and clarify for people because it has changed, and that is actually changing to reflect our understanding of the disease. And because our understanding of the disease has changed, our medical regimens have also changed to suit that. So in the old days, it was all called diabetes because it was representing the fact that the blood glucoses are elevated and the urine glucose is elevated, and we didn't distinguish between the different forms of diabetes. And in fact, we've known about diabetes since the ancient Egyptians. They actually were the first to characterize this disorder. Then it's interesting how long we've actually known about it. So in changing the terminology, the reason behind that was to try and reflect the fact that type 1 diabetes really represents an autoimmune destruction of the pancreas, which means basically that the body attacks the pancreas and destroys it, rendering the patient completely unable to produce any insulin on their own and reducing their ability to digest or metabolize any carbohydrates that they would eat. This was typically called juvenile diabetes before, but in fact, that's inappropriate because we have several adults who get this type of diabetes also. And back on our previous show when we discussed premature ovarian failure, I did bring that up as one of the characteristics of a patient population who has autoimmune diseases. So the autoimmune component is key for diagnosing type 1 diabetes, and those patients are rendered insulin dependent for life, and there's no other therapy for them. Whereas in the type 2 diabetic, it really reflects an overall scenario of insulin resistance. And these patients make insulin, and they're able to process their food. They typically are overweight, but not always. But really the type 2 is reflecting more the underlying cardiovascular disease risk that is inherent in the type 2 diabetic, which is where the insulin resistance comes into play. And insulin resistance is a fancy term for your body's inability to utilize the hormones involved in normal metabolism effectively.
So women in sort of focusing our show today on women with type 2 diabetes, what are some of the signs of insulin resistance? So basically insulin resistance precedes, it's kind of a, a preceding disease before you have full-blown type 2 diabetes. Is that correct?
Yes, it is. And the reason that women who have diabetes or women who are at risk for diabetes is such a unique problem compared to the men is because many women will go decades with insulin resistance and at high risk, and they'll never be told and they'll never know because of the failure to recognize, both on the part of the patient as well as the physician, the role that their current complaints have in this process.
I see. So what are some of the things that what are some of the common signs or signs associated with insulin resistance that you see in your female patients?
In our classic scenario of polycystic ovarian syndrome, this is a very, very common sign of insulin resistance and what we would label prediabetes. And PCOS affects about 17% of our menstruating women or our childbearing age women. And the common signs are irregular periods, excessive acne, facial hair that is dark, thick, black, much like men's facial hair,
okay.
Loss of hair on the front part of the head in terms of like a frontal balding pattern,
mm-hmm.
Perhaps obesity, not always, and a family history or a personal history of infertility.
Okay. So basically women who present with, and actually we're going to be doing a show on PCOS, basically women who present with PCOS are at high risk for developing type 2 diabetes.
Yes.
Because they already have insulin resistance.
Yes, and in fact the PCOS population is quite unique if you actually have that diagnosis because these women are such high risk for developing diabetes that very commonly they develop gestational diabetes before they even develop diabetes in adulthood. And if that is missed or not discussed with them during their childbearing years, I frequently see these women diagnosed with diabetes at the time that they hit menopause because that's when their body loses the protective benefits of estrogen and they've now progressed old enough that these insulin-resistant features, these metabolic problems begin to manifest. And unfortunately, they're usually diagnosed when they're in the intensive care unit with their first heart attack because these women, the PCOS women and women who are at risk for diabetes, frequently have a cholesterol pattern that speaks to this risk in terms of a high triglyceride and a low HDL, which is very, very high risk for coronary disease.
And just for our listeners, when you're when you're talking about a high LDL or
high triglyceride,
and a low
HDL,
so the
good protective one.
And so one is the good cholesterol, one is the one is high-density lipids and the other is low-density lipids, and we want more HDL and less LDL.
Right. The HDL should be high, H for high. And
good.
The triglycerides are particularly toxic.
Okay, H for high. That's a great way to remember it. Now, okay, just to backtrack, what we're talking about is type 2 diabetes is extremely common in women who also have PCOS because PCOS is a condition that is associated with insulin resistance.
Right.
So women who have, who are presenting with sort of excess androgen, you know, sort of male hormone, hormonal patterns such as hair growth on the face or hirsutism, which we're also going to be doing a show on next week, and those sorts of things, they should be on the lookout for insulin resistance.
Correct.
Okay.
They absolutely need to be screened and reviewed for this.
Now, you had also mentioned that some women with PCOS, although infertility is a problem, there are certainly a number of women with PCOS that get pregnant.
Yes.
Because you also mentioned gestational diabetes, or are we talking about a different population now?
No, it's the same population. It's very interesting. The infertility is not uniform. It seems in my patient population to be more consistent with European descent patients. Versus patients of another ethnic descent, and it has to do with the irregularity of their cycles.
I see.
So the more irregular the patient, the more infertile she is, although people, that's not necessarily part of the diagnosis. People can have PCOS and not necessarily be irregular in their menstrual cycle.
I see.
But if these women get pregnant, the risk of gestational diabetes is dramatically increased.
Okay. Now, in the non-PCOS population, it's it's also my understanding that women who present with gestational diabetes, it may be a it may be simply an unveiling of type 2 diabetes.
And that is correct.
That is not just a short-lived, you know, diabetes during pregnancy.
No, you're absolutely right.
So women who are told when they're pregnant that they have gestational diabetes are also at high risk for type 2 diabetes.
That is absolutely correct.
Okay.
And the more gestational diabetes they have, meaning the more pregnancies, then they almost certainly will become diabetic.
So, also, when you look at the statistics of who in the population has type 2 diabetes, is it not true that women present with type 2 diabetes more frequently than men?
No, it's actually true later in life, after menopause.
After menopause.
Yes.
Okay.
Men do have a higher incidence of diabetes, but that trend is eliminated as the women age.
Okay. All right. So that's not... Okay.
So unfortunately, women feel somewhat protected because they can have all the other features of insulin resistance like the men, and they don't have the incidence of heart disease to go along with it to be discovered by their practitioner until they hit menopause, and then their bodies start changing hormonally to become even more severe than the men. And at that point, the risk of dying from coronary disease as it relates to a diabetic patient is actually greater for women than for men at that point.
So would it be fair to say then that women premenopausally are more inclined to be insulin resistant and postmenopausally more inclined to have type 2 diabetes?
Yes, they're definitely.
I'm sorry, Dr. Christofides, we're going to have to take a break now. My guest is Ohio-based Dr. Elena Christofides, who is an endocrinologist and also diabetologist, talking with me today about type 2 diabetes in women. For more information, we suggest starting with my book, The Type 2 Diabetes Sourcebook for Women, available on Amazon. When we come back, we'll talk about blood sugar levels, more about our current discussion, and also what do blood sugar levels mean in the U.S. and what do they mean in Canada, as well as the A1C test. I'm Dr. Sarah Rosenthal, your host. For further information, visit me online at sarahhealth.com. All shows are archived on our site, as well as at Voice America Health and Wellness Network at voiceamerica.com. Stay tuned. We'll be right back.
Your Health Press is a publishing company that specializes in unique books and hard-to-find health products, topics that mainstream publishers ignore due to rarity, stigma, or controversy. Looking for books on thyroid cancer, early menopause, ostomy, or other rare or embarrassing conditions? You'll find lots of unique topics at yourhealthpress.com. At yourhealthpress.com, all of our books are available exclusively online or via toll-free ordering, so you can purchase in privacy. No cash register syndrome or special ordering from your bookstore or library. Your Health Press titles are available at all online bookstores, including Amazon and BarnesandNoble.com. To browse the Your Health Press catalog of titles, search the list of authors, or purchase, visit YourHealthPress.com. For toll-free ordering, call 1-888-232-4444. Your Health Press, prescribed reading for today's niche market.
Your life, your health, your network. Voice America Health and Wellness.
Every Monday from 9 to 10 a.m. Pacific Time, tune in to hear Healing with Pat Honeyotis. Pat will interview authors and experts in the field of alternative and traditional medicine and discuss current issues. Accurate information will be provided, beliefs and practices will be shared, and listener questions will be answered. This show is about helping educate listeners to become empowered so that they can make informed choices regarding their physical, spiritual, and emotional health. So tune in to hear Healing with Pat Honeyotis and learn more about your healthcare options. Only on the world's elite health station, your life, your health, your network, Voice America Health and Wellness.
Hi, this is Mark Victor Hansen. You know me for Chicken Soup for the Soul, the 1 Minute Millionaire, and Cracking the Millionaire Code. And what I want you to know is that if you want to have rip-roaringly good health, listen to Health Crusades by my friend John Farley.
Tune in to Health Crusades with John Farley every Thursday at 8 a.m. Pacific Standard Time, only on Voice America Health and Wellness. Tune in every Wednesday at 3 p.m. Pacific Standard Time for Sex on a Wednesday Afternoon with Sierra Gunn. Sex on a Wednesday Afternoon is an entertaining and enlightening look at sex, its joys, and its many challenges. With its focus on the causes and effects of sexual dysfunction, Sex on a Wednesday Afternoon explores such related topics as infertility, menopause, sexual enhancement drugs, and their natural alternatives. Listeners are invited to call in and ask questions, relate their experiences, and give their opinions to the host, her guests, and to the medical doctors co-hosting the show. With tens of millions of people worldwide affected by loss of libido, and with 30 million adult American men suffering from some form of erectile dysfunction, this show offers important information and, most of all, hope. It is the aspiration of this program to assist men and women with definitive sexual challenges in their search for empathy, peace of mind, and possible solutions to their problems. So tune in every Wednesday at 3 p.m. Pacific Standard Time for Sex on a Wednesday Afternoon with Sierra Gunn on Your Health, Your Life, Your Network, Voice America Health and Wellness.
We all want to improve the environment, but not all of us are willing to make radical changes in our lifestyle to help. If you're one of the millions of people who want to change the world without changing your life, tune in to Voice America Health and Wellness every Monday at 1 p.m. Pacific Time for The Lazy Environmentalist with Josh Dorfman. The Lazy Environmentalist is about easily and effortlessly greening our modern lifestyles without ever sacrificing style. Host Josh Dorfman will bring together designers, entrepreneurs, and visionaries who are rapidly making the modern green lifestyle a reality. So help your world and help yourself by listening to The Lazy Environmentalist with Josh Dorfman every Monday at 1 p.m. Pacific Time, right here on Voice America Health and Wellness. It's your right and sole purpose to live a joyful life of abundant love, health, and prosperity. Be Positive with Nurse Crilly will introduce you to the idea of a positive outlook and how it impacts every aspect of your life, your mind, your body, and your spirit. Each show will look at some aspect of life that is less than satisfying and how you can make it better by challenging and changing your thoughts, your core beliefs, and your feelings. It is possible for you to get out of a negative cycle of being and get into a positive cycle of being. You are invited to take a positively enlightening journey with Be Positive and Nurse Crilly every Tuesday at 7 a.m. Pacific Time right here on Voice America Health and Wellness. It's good for what ails you.
Your life, your health, your network. You're listening to Voice America Health and Wellness.
Welcome back to Sarah Health Radio with Dr. Sarah Rosenthal. If you have a question or comment, dial toll-free 1-866-369-3742. Now back to the show. Here's Dr. Sarah.
Hello, we are back. I'm Dr. Sarah Rosenthal, your host. Welcome back to Sarah Health with Dr. Sarah Rosenthal and our discussion of type 2 diabetes in women with Ohio-based endocrinologist and diabetologist, Dr. Elena Christofides. Just before we went to the break, we were talking about the populations of women at risk and sort of this demarcation between sort of premenopausal insulin resistance and postmenopausal type 2 diabetes and whether or not there's gender differences in incidence. I thought this might be a good time to talk about what do the blood sugar levels mean, because there is such a thing as impaired fasting glucose, impaired glucose tolerance, you know, diabetes, normal glucose, and perhaps you can walk us through all of the confusion. And also for our Canadian listeners, I'd like to remind Canadians that blood sugar levels are measured differently in Canada than they are in the U.S., and we can go into that as well.
Yes, unfortunately, actually, the U.S. is different than the entire rest of the world.
The rest of the world, really? Oh, so Europeans
yes.
are also in millimoles per liter?
Yes.
Oh,
yes.
Good. Okay,
it's
well, we should explain that. Okay.
Yes, the U.S. measures blood glucose in milligrams per deciliter, whereas Canada and the rest of the world measure it in millimoles per liter. And the conversion is you take the millimole reading and you multiply it by 18 to achieve a milligram per deciliter reading.
Okay.
So all of my numbers will be reported in milligrams per deciliter because that's what my familiarity is.
Oh,
with.
No, that's fine. That's fine. And I've got the other readings in front of me as well. But let's talk to our American American population first and explain what all the milligrams per deciliter are about.
Yeah, the history of this really relates back to a poor understanding of what truly normal blood sugar was and when disease began. So the reason the criteria keep changing is because our understanding of when disease actually begins is increasing over time. Obviously, medicine advances. We have newer information. So that's one of the reasons that people are very confused about what is normal and what is not normal, and why do we have different rules. And it's also imperative to remind our listeners that there's a difference between normal and when you actually implement therapy, because there is this gray area of understanding in the physician world as to when should you start therapy, when is it appropriate to start therapy, because no one wants to jump on every case the minute the blood sugar becomes abnormal, because it could be transient or could be related to an illness or may not be real, because these readings do have some inherent error. So our current levels of normal in terms of our understanding is a true normal blood sugar is somewhere below 90, probably about 86 is the current thought process of that, and that the blood sugar should never be above 90, and that is considered to be truly normal both before and after eating.
So just to give the other reading, so in millimoles per liter, that would be a blood sugar level that we'd like to see that is below 6.1 millimoles per liter, and somewhere below, did you say 88, below 90?
Below 90, so divide that by 18.
Okay.
So roughly 4.5.
Okay.
So at the present point of time then, the guidelines recommend screening anyone with a fasting blood sugar above 95 and screening them for the presence of diabetes. Now, diabetes is actually diagnosed with a fasting blood sugar greater than 126. So if you have a fasting reading, meaning you've gotten up in the morning, you haven't had anything to eat for at least 8 hours, and your blood sugar is 126 or greater, that's considered to be diabetic. Then the reason we have all the other gray area is what do you do with the people who are between 95 and 126? And when we talk about screening an individual, we are referring to using an oral glucose tolerance test, or OGTT for short, and that's where we take an individual who's fasting in the morning, we give them a glucola-type drink, which has a fixed amount of carbohydrates in there. It's actually all sugar. And then we measure their blood 30 minutes, 1 hour, and 2 hours after they drink the drink. It's usually an orange soda or like a cola-type product.
Mm-hmm.
And the values that are obtained during this procedure is much like a stress test on the heart. You get an EKG during a stress test to evaluate the strain on the heart. You get blood sugar levels after ingesting a cola of this nature to assess the strain on the body metabolically. And you can either have a diagnosis of just IFG, which is impaired fasting glucose, where the fasting sugar is abnormal, but the sugars during the glucose tolerance test are normal or below 140. You can have a diagnosis of impaired glucose tolerance, or IGT, where you have both an abnormal fasting reading and or abnormal blood glucose readings during the course of this glucose tolerance test anywhere between 140 and 180. Or you can actually have a diagnosis of diabetes where the fasting blood sugar is abnormal and or the post glucose tolerance test readings are over 200.
Okay.
And that this should be repeated at least one time if you're going to give someone the diagnosis of diabetes. But inherent in this diagnostic setup is the recognition that some people are sicker than these screening patients may be. And if you have a patient who presents with a random blood sugar over 200, even with or without symptoms, and it's repeated on one other occasion, that they are diabetic and do not require the diagnosis based on a glucose tolerance test.
Right. Okay. So basically, just to backtrack, when we're talking about a fasting blood glucose, or a fasting, also called a fasting plasma glucose, which is where you haven't eaten for about 8 hours, you're saying that a normal blood sugar should you're saying a normal blood sugar in that case should be below 90 or below 110.
Well, it's actually,
I've seen.
You see the
clinical,
you see the problem.
I've seen clinical practice guide according to the 2003 clinical practice guidelines, I guess, which is the latest version, it's my understanding that it needs to be below 110, but then if you talk to individual practitioners, they think that's a little bit high, and they'd like to see patients even lower.
Yes, that is correct. I mean, the guidelines, one must always remember that the guidelines
they're more
are
liberal.
They're much more liberal. They're created to make people aware of where the current best practice evidence medicine is going. However, if you talk to individual practitioners who are aware of the severity of the disease and where the new research is taking us, this is what's led to the latest guideline recommendation that anyone with a fasting plasma glucose or a fasting sugar greater than 95 should at least be screened.
Oh, okay. And where and how recent is that guideline?
That was from 2003 or 2004.
Okay.
Yeah.
Okay, so they should. So there's like a there's sort of like a screening, and then there's
right.
a okay. So that's why they say it's
right.
below 110 because they want to see it lower. And,
right.
Okay.
So part of the diagnostic criteria would be a normal a blood sugar below 110 as a considered normal for screening purposes during the procedure of a glucose tolerance test.
Okay.
However, for purposes of awareness, we are now lowering. We've lowered the threshold to 95.
Okay. So it's a good deal lower, and then it's impaired if you're seeing something. If you're seeing technically, according to the practice guidelines, if you're seeing something between 110 and 126,
right,
considered
that's
impaired fasting glucose,
correct.
IFG, and then diabetes if it's over 26.
For the correct for the actual
126.
Right, for the actual ICD-9 code on a chart that's sent to insurance companies. A fasting plasma glucose between 110 and 125 would be considered impaired fasting glucose. For our purposes of educating and screening, we would take that down to 95.
Okay.
So the other issue with that is if you actually give someone that diagnosis, that changes their insurance profile, that changes their life insurance profile, and so one of the reasons for lowering it to 95 is to initiate screening education and treatment, perhaps with diet and exercise, prior to the patient actually obtaining a diagnosis that would affect them insurance-wise.
Mm-hmm. Okay. So basically, so there's differences also between a fasting blood sugar level and just sort of at any time.
Right.
Okay. So the any time, somewhere around 72 and 108. Is that about right? Or?
Actually, less than 140 is what we're considering normal
right
now.
Okay.
Yeah, that's the current guideline. Is anything under 140 for a random?
I see.
It's considered acceptable
because who knows when they've eaten?
Correct.
I see. And yeah, so it gets very, very obviously the fact that we spent so much time just trying to sort this out.
means
that it's very confusing. We're gonna continue this discussion because I wanna talk about the A1C. We're gonna take a break again. My guest is Ohio-based Dr. Elena Christofides, who is an endocrinologist and also diabetologist, talking with me today about type 2 diabetes in women. For more information, we suggest starting with my book, The Type 2 Diabetes Source Book for Women, available on Amazon. When we come back, we'll talk about the A1C test again. I also want to get into diet and medications that can help lower blood sugar levels in women. I'm Dr. Sarah Rosenthal, your host. For further information, visit me online at sarahhealth.com. All shows are archived on our site, as well as at Voice America Health and Wellness Network at voiceamerica.com. Stay tuned. We'll be right back.
Your Health Press is a publishing company that specializes in unique books and hard-to-find health products, topics that mainstream publishers ignore due to rarity, stigma, or controversy. Looking for books on thyroid cancer, early menopause, ostomy, or other rare or embarrassing conditions? You'll find lots of unique topics at yourhealthpress.com. At yourhealthpress.com, all of our books are available exclusively online or via toll-free ordering, so you can purchase in privacy. No cash register syndrome or special ordering from your bookstore or library. Your Health Press titles are available at all online bookstores, including Amazon and BarnesandNoble.com. To browse the Your Health Press catalog of titles, search the list of authors, or purchase, visit yourhealthpress.com. For toll-free ordering, call 1-888-232-4444. Your Health Press, prescribed reading for today's niche market.
women, do you feel that you're too old to be active, too old to be beautiful, too old to have fun, or too old to be fabulous? Well, if that's what you think, then there's good news for you. You're wrong. Tune in to Voice America every Wednesday at 8 a.m. Pacific Standard Time for Aging Outside the Box, Fabulous Women Over 50 with Shirley Mitchell. Aging Outside the Box is a fabulous, fun program that gives you every reason to feel greater than you ever have. Host Shirley Mitchell and O.E. Cruiser Small will cover phenomenal topics such as women's issues, health, diet, exercise, nutrition, faith, travel, and many other concerns for women of all ages. Feel young, feel smart, and feel fabulous by tuning in to Aging Outside the Box. Fabulous Women Over 50 with Shirley Mitchell every Wednesday at 8 a.m. Pacific Standard Time, right here on VoiceAmerica.com.
Are you tired of being tired? Are you sick of sitting around while life passes you by? You can get back on track by tuning in to Voice America Health and Wellness every Monday at 12 p.m. Pacific Time for Attracting Abundance, the Energy of Success with Carol Look. Attracting Abundance is the program that empowers you to finally break through your limiting beliefs and blocks and shows you how to succeed in all areas of your life, from improved financial abundance, health and weight problems, as well as your relationships. Don't wait another week to be joyful. Listen to Attracting Abundance, the Energy of Success with Carol Look, this Monday at 12 p.m. Pacific Time, right here on Voice America Health and Wellness. Tune in every Monday to Voice America Health and Wellness for Relationships, Life, and Stuff with Dr. Lynn Lampert. Each week, Dr. Lampert will tackle issues that affect you in day-to-day life, and you can also call into this online chat fest and talk live with Lynn or her guests as they discuss some of the most exciting events of the day. So tune in and call in to Relationships, Life, and Stuff with Dr. Lynn Lampert every Monday at 10 a.m. Pacific Time, right here on Voice America Health and Wellness.
To perform at your maximum potential, you need to have all aspects of your life working properly. On Mind, Brain, and Body, Dr. Michael John Kell will bring you honest, open discussions concerning your physical, mental, and financial health. If you're ready to find purpose and meaning in your life, tune in to Mind, Brain, and Body every Friday at 8 a.m. Pacific. Mind, Brain, and Body on Voice America Health and Wellness. Radio dedicated to your health, wealth, wisdom, and purpose.
Tune in on Thursdays at 9 a.m. Pacific Standard Time for Healing the Grieving Heart, the program that takes you on a journey through grief after the death of a child. Join Dr. Gloria Horsley, marriage and family therapist and bereaved parent, while she interviews and discusses with other bereaved parents and siblings how they have coped with the death of a child and gone on to create and realize new dreams. So tune in Thursdays at 9 a.m. Pacific Standard Time for Healing the Grieving Heart with Dr. Gloria Horsley, right here on Voice America Health and Wellness.
Opinions, options, answers. You're listening to Voice America Health and Wellness.
Welcome back to Sarah Health Radio with Dr. Sarah Rosenthal. If you have a question or comment, dial toll-free 1-866-369-3742. Now back to the show. Here's Dr. Sarah.
Hello, we are back. I'm Dr. Sarah Rosenthal, your host. Welcome back to Sarah Health with Dr. Sarah Rosenthal and our discussion of type 2 diabetes in women with Ohio-based endocrinologist and diabetologist Dr. Elena Christofides. So when we went to the break, we were just teasing out the confusion regarding blood sugar levels. And I guess just to backtrack, what I want to remind our listeners is that there are guidelines that are a little bit more liberal than what your individual practitioner is going to tell you. And I know myself, having gone to my doctor last year, he was looking at my blood sugar levels and saying, oh, yeah, it should be sort of in this range. And I was thinking, wait a minute, that sounds low. Because I'm used to reading, you know, the clinical practice guidelines. So,
right.
So yeah, so that it's good to know that there's obviously a role for guidelines, and then there's actually what happens in real life and actual practice, and I think that might be what confuses a lot of people. So when women find out what their blood sugar levels are and they hear that they have impaired fasting glucose or they're sort of in that diabetes range, then I guess we have to look at another test that they should be going for, assuming that we're also going to get into talking about treatment. Can we talk a little bit about the A1C test and what that is, how long it's been around, and what its use is for doctors?
Yeah, the hemoglobin A1C is a very nice test. It's been around for absolutely decades. And really what it represents is the ambient level of glucose in the blood. So therefore, everyone has a value because you always have glucose in your blood, otherwise you wouldn't be alive. So the clinical utility of that test is that it's really reflective of the blood sugar 24/7. So every 3 months, which is about the time frame you should be getting it, because it really relates to the lifespan of the hemoglobin on the red blood cell. So the red blood cell has a lifespan of about 90 days, and once it has glucose attached to it, it's never removed until the red blood cell dies. So it represents a very stable evaluation of the overall glucose levels as they've been fluctuating in the patient. So every 3 months we obtain this number, and it tells us more than just what a blood sugar check is, because the vast majority of patients don't check their blood sugar the way we would like them to check it or as often as we would like them to check it. And even if they check it once a day, that only tells you what your blood glucose is for that second that you drew your blood, and it doesn't tell you what your sugar is the other 23 hours, 59 minutes, and 59 seconds of the day.
So it's kind of like an average. So sort of
it
like
is.
You could have like a, so if you, you so if you have like a an A or a B grade on your A1C, not that it's measured that way, it's kind of like saying that, well, some days you're worse than other
right.
days. So that sort of thing. Now what are the values that people should be looking for on
well,
the report?
Well, true normal, and again I'm going to refer to true normal because there's no reason you can't try to achieve normal in someone who is capable both mentally as well as medically. And a true normal is about 5.8 or below.
Okay.
So about 5% is true normal. Now, for purposes of treatment guidelines, the American Diabetes Association recommends a hemoglobin A1C goal of below 7%. And the American Association of Clinical Endocrinologists recommends a goal level of below 6.5. And the reason these two agencies have a discrepancy is because the American Association of Clinical Endocrinologists feels that there's no reason you can't attempt to get someone to be normal. And, of course, you can loosen that up dependent on what their particular mitigating factors might be. Whereas the ADA's cutoff is actually reflective of some population data that has been done worldwide indicating that disease complications may not be occurring until the hemoglobin A1C reaches 7%. But this is actually a false premise because there are significant amount of other studies that show that even if the hemoglobin A1C is normal at 5.5, let's say, there are still disease complications that occur because of this idea of insulin resistance.
So basically, a target or a normal is somewhere between 4 and 6%.
Correct.
For A1C. A suboptimal would be somewhere greater than, or sort of somewhere between, 6.1 and 7. Poor control, somewhere between 7 and 8.4. And then I have here listed alarming would be anything greater than 8.4.
Yeah, we call that lousy.
Okay, so in other words, this is not
very bad.
So people want to be aiming between that 4 and 6%, regardless of what country you live in, right?
That is correct. That is a universal. That
it's
is
measured.
Universal
it's measured the same everywhere, which is good news. Okay, so basically, we've figured out what our blood sugar levels are. We figured out where we need to be in A1C. Now, maybe we could talk a little bit about self-testing blood sugar, because that's kind of, I guess, what we need to be doing is if you want to keep your blood sugar level as normal as possible, as frequently as possible, we need to self-test and also do meal planning and diet. So how does all that work? What would you tell a patient?
What we basically tell a patient is that we don't necessarily want to put them on a diet. We want to teach them lifestyle modification so that they are doing the best that they can for their health for the long run. So by using the self-monitored blood glucose meters, or SMBG meters, it allows the patient to take control of their disease on a day-by-day basis. And we use those numbers to assess our response to therapy, our response to diet, as well as the patient can use those numbers to assess when they maybe should or shouldn't have done something previous to that reading. So, for instance, when you have patients who've never checked their blood sugar before, now they start checking their blood sugar and their sugars are high, it's particularly, say, after a bad meal. I've had patients who told me that they had no idea how bad two chili dogs, french fries, and a milkshake might be for them until they checked their blood sugar and it was 300 or 400 after eating. And it does provide a lot of feedback to the patient to help them adjust what they're doing.
Okay. So basically, so lifestyle modification is definitely the route that everybody needs to go when they discover that they have impaired fasting glucose, impaired glucose tolerance, or diabetes, or insulin resistance. But I guess when do you put somebody on a pill, and what kinds of pills are out there? Should you put somebody on medication prior to these lifestyle modifications? Do you do a watch and wait? How does that all work?
Wow, that's the million-dollar question, and that's where the guidelines really break down, because in the arena of diabetes medicines, we're actually advancing faster than our guidelines can be rewritten.
Okay. So we're talking, just for our listeners, we're talking about oral diabetes medications that can help lower your blood sugar in different ways.
We're actually now moving into the realm of injectables beyond insulin.
Ah.
Do you see what I mean? We've had an entire new drug class that was discovered.
Really?
And implemented last year, which is injectable therapy that's not insulin.
Really?
Yeah.
Oh, I don't even think I know about this.
So we've now moved into the realm of actually probably very, very close to a perfect therapy, a perfect treatment, if not very nearly a cure for some people, which is just unheard of, and so unfortunately our guidelines are still reflective of the oral diabetes therapies and their implementation versus the addition of these new ones, because they've been out less than a year.
Well, let's talk about the latest then.
Yeah. They're much more exciting.
Yeah. So what is this all about?
Well, it's interesting because, you know, this is something that has really been known since 1902. In terms of the hormones that are malfunctioning and some specific metabolic malfunctions that the body undergoes as it develops insulin resistance and then develops onto full-blown diabetes. And
I'm gonna stop you there, and we're gonna come back
analyzing
and talk all about this. We're gonna take another break. My guest is Ohio-based Dr. Elena Christofides, who is an endocrinologist and also diabetologist, about to tell us about some breakthroughs. She's talking with me today about type 2 diabetes in women. For more information, we suggest starting with my book, The Type 2 Diabetes Sourcebook for Women, available on Amazon. When we come back, we'll pick up where we left off on this medication trail, and also maybe talk about preventing complications, which is the point of getting diabetes under control. I'm Dr. Sarah Rosenthal, your host. For further information, visit me online at sarahhealth.com. All shows are archived on our site, as well as at Voice America Health and Wellness Network at voiceamerica.com. Stay tuned. We'll be right back.
Your Health Press is a publishing company that specializes in unique books and hard-to-find health products, topics that mainstream publishers ignore due to rarity, stigma, or controversy. Looking for books on thyroid cancer, early menopause, ostomy, or other rare or embarrassing conditions? You'll find lots of unique topics at yourhealthpress.com. At yourhealthpress.com, all of our books are available exclusively online or via toll-free ordering, so you can purchase in privacy. No cash register syndrome or special ordering from your bookstore or library. Your Health Press titles are available at all online bookstores, including Amazon and BarnesandNoble.com. To browse the Your Health Press catalog of titles, search the list of authors, or purchase, visit YourHealthPress.com. For toll-free ordering, call 1-888-232-4444. Your Health Press, prescribed reading for today's niche market.
Opinions, options, answers. Voice America Health and Wellness.
Have you ever wondered where diseases come from or why you have gotten sick? Imagine one day in the future, you will be able to discover from a small sample of your blood whether you are at risk for cardiovascular disease, osteoporosis, cancer, or other chronic diseases. That may be much sooner than you think. Tune in to Voice America Health and Wellness every Wednesday at 7 a.m. Pacific Standard Time for Integrative Medicine with Dr. Joe Veltman. You will learn about traditional and non-traditional healing modalities used in integrative medicine, as well as suggestions on how to improve your health and how you can co-create a healing environment with your healthcare professional. So get in touch with your health and listen to Integrative Medicine with Dr. Joe Veltman, Wednesdays at 7 a.m. Pacific Standard Time on Voice America Health and Wellness.
Growing Up in America explores the challenges, risks, benefits, and differences this generation of children face each day. Hosted by veteran pediatric emergency physician and father of four, Dr. Charles Muzica, this show is for parents, teens, and children. It crosses each generation. By exploring the unique aspects of matriculation within this current generation, we hope to find answers and ways of optimizing this experience for today's generation. Growing Up in America with Dr. Charles Muzica broadcasts each Tuesday at 2 p.m. Pacific, 5 p.m. Eastern, on the Voice America Health and Wellness Channel.
When you combine energy secrets from ancient China and the latest breakthroughs in medicinal science, you get Power Healing with Dr. Shaw. Heard every Friday at 5 p.m. Pacific Time on Voice America Health and Wellness. Each week, Dr. Shaw will bring you another step closer to the expanding world of body space medicine. You will quickly learn and appreciate how Power Healing is a perfect alternative to hospitals and expensive drugs. Take a step beyond modern medicine every Friday at 5 p.m. Pacific Time with Dr. Shaw on Power Healing, right here on Voice America Health and Wellness.
Mental illness will touch 50% of us either personally, in a loved one, family member, or close friend. The recognizable lexicon of disorders includes depression, anxiety, brain injury, bipolar disorder, attention deficit disorder, and schizophrenia. But what does it all mean? On Psychiatry, Ask the Expert, hosted by Dr. Neil Kay, Dr. Kay explores the inner workings of the brain and mind. From proper diagnosis to treatment of the behavioral, cognitive, and emotional aspects of mental illness, renowned board-certified psychiatrist and mental health expert, Dr. Kay addresses these issues of the most common illnesses facing us in today's fast-paced, stress-filled, challenging world. Psychiatry, Ask the Expert, broadcasts each Tuesday at 5 p.m. Pacific, 8 a.m. Eastern, on the Voice America Health and Wellness Channel.
Tired of life working out the exact same no matter how much you try to change it? It's time to get a new perspective. Perspectives, Alternatives for Living Life Better, with host Margie Sugarman, clears the cobwebs of confusion and offers practical solutions to life's issues. Broadcasting every Wednesday at 4 p.m. Pacific on the Voice America Health and Wellness Channel, clinical social worker and psychotherapist Margie Sugarman is here so you can make the right physical, mental, emotional, and spiritual choices for your life. Right here on the Voice America Health and Wellness Channel.
Opinions, options, answers. You're listening to Voice America Health and Wellness.
Welcome back to Sarah Health Radio with Dr. Sarah Rosenthal. If you have a question or comment, dial toll-free 1-866-369-3742. Now back to the show. Here's Dr. Sarah.
Hello, we are back. I'm Dr. Sarah Rosenthal, your host. Welcome back to Sarah Health with Dr. Sarah Rosenthal and our discussion of type 2 diabetes in women with Ohio-based endocrinologist and diabetologist Dr. Elena Christofides. So when we left off, you were talking about the new injectable medications for type 2 diabetes, and let's pick up on that.
Yeah, the exciting thing about these medications is they take advantage of some information we've had, as I was saying, since 1902 regarding some of the very basic hormonal malfunctions that occur in a diabetic patient. So when these medicines were discovered and then made commercially available, it really has provided a missing link for our diabetics and our treatment of even pre-diabetics, because it fixes the hormonal abnormalities related to diabetes, much like thyroid medication fixes the thyroid deficiency, much like insulin fixes the deficiency in a type 1 diabetic who is absolutely deficient.
So what are these medications called, and what is the biology of it? What is the generic name?
Well, they're brand new, so there's no generic name. There's no generic available, but the new class is called the incretin mimetics, or the incretin hormones.
Incretin.
Incretin.
I-N-C-R-E-T-I-N.
Correct.
Incretin. Okay.
And that's reflective of the name that was applied to this class of hormones that was first described in 1902. And the main drug for type 2 diabetics, and there's actually one for type 2s and there's one for type 1s. The main drug for type 2s is called Byetta, B-Y-E-T-T-A. And that is, the name of that is exenatide, or E-X-E-N, and A-T-I-D-E. And what it does biologically, it's an injectable because it's a very special hormone protein, and most hormones cannot be taken orally in order for them to be active, and this kind of protein hormone. And what it does is it restores normal levels and restores a balance of a hormone that's missing in the body called GLP-1, which diabetics lack. And the role of GLP-1
is huge. So all diabetics are type 2 diabetics?
Only type 2s lack it.
Wow.
So only type 2s lack it, or in pre-diabetics lack it.
This sounds like it's almost like dramatic as discovering insulin in 1921.
You know, you're absolutely right, Sarah. We really feel that that is definitely on par with that. I mean, when these were discovered and made available, many people who have been in medicine a lot longer than I have made the exact same statement, that for them, this is as exciting as the discovery of insulin. This is as revolutionary as the discovery of insulin.
So then all the oral medications that we know about, like the like metformin and the insulin sensitizers and insulin secretagogues.
Well, they still have a role. The metformin and insulin sensitizers, what we call the TZD class, which is currently comprised of Actos and Avandia, those do have a role because those improve insulin resistance. They lower the body's insulin resistance, whereas this newer class of medications improve insulin production and food intake. Actually, they lower food intake. And interestingly, we're now getting away from punishing the patient with lifestyle restrictions and diet restrictions because it's now become very apparent that a lot of the weight and dietary problems that diabetics have is really related to a lack of this hormone. And when you replace this hormone, the weight loss can be dramatic.
Isn't that unbelievable? Well, I'm absolutely blown over. Obviously,
yes,
I haven't.
Too.
Obviously, I haven't been. See, I tell you, you missed 6 months in reading diabetes care, and there you go. Well, okay. So basically, just to recap then. So all of our current oral medications for diabetes have a role when we're talking about insulin resistance.
Correct.
But that these new hormones that have been discovered, the incretin hormones, are really more for full-blown type 2 diabetes.
That is their current indication as add-on therapy to the other oral agents. However,
but you think it's going to take over?
Yes, it's already being used in that arena, obviously off-label according to the FDA guidelines, but it's already being used in that arena, and we currently have a study going on for that, and it's been very, very impressive for people who are at risk, people who are already insulin resistant, because the beauty of this drug, since it's a hormone, there are no contraindications, there are no drug-drug interactions, there really are no side effects.
So where are we with FDA approval and availability across the sort of universally or like in different countries?
Well, it was approved for use in the United States and it was launched. It was approved for use April 29th last year. It was launched June 1st. And the launch in Canada has been delayed. I'm not sure why. Usually it's politics of some sort.
Health Canada tends to be very, they like to take their time.
Well, it's interesting. Yeah, they do, but it's interesting because even the Europeans are slow to adopt this one, which is rather strange. Normally, they're the first ones to do anything as compared to the U.S.
Yeah.
They tend to adopt medicines far earlier than we do, but it's been delayed in Europe as well because they wanted to see even longer data than what we had here, and so now they've had their data, and they're now currently reviewing it. So I expect approval in the EU and in Canada by the end of this year. If they stay on track.
Well, I'm going to just have to go to an American Diabetes Association conference soon and learn all about this stuff. But okay, so basically we're in a very interesting time with diabetes treatment for type 2 because I was going to get into a discussion of obesity, you know, as well. But I guess what I'm sort of seeing is that we were looking, like, we're always on the lookout for what, you know, is it obesity or is it a missing hormone such as leptin or some of the,
right.
You know, what is the issue and what
is it diet or is it hormones?
Yeah, and what it sounds like you're saying is that we've actually found a missing link that has that seems to be causing a lot of the effects. But does that still excuse? I mean, we are obese and we do
yeah.
eat too much, and we still have all those problems. So where does this come in with? How does this change lifestyle, obesity issues, all of that stuff?
Well, you're absolutely right, Sarah. The problem is, of course, much more complex than what I initially made it out to be. Part of the reason is that...
Oh, okay. Quickly finish your sentence, and then I think I'm going to have to stop.
Okay. The issue is that these medicines help, and there is missing link hormones, but this is the first one that actually, when given back to a patient, fixes what they saw in the lab, whereas some of the other hormones, like leptin and resistin, haven't played out.
I see.
The problem is, though, avoiding getting there in the first place, and that's where diet comes into play in childhood, teenage years, and in your 20s, and avoiding even getting there, which is possible through proper lifestyle and diet, and that's what the missing link is for a lot of patients at this point.
Where this has taken us into territory that has been fascinating, and we haven't gotten into diabetes complications. I guess that's enough. That's time for another show, and we'll invite Dr. Elena Christofides back for that. I want to thank my guest today, Dr. Elena Christofides, whose surname once again rhymes with diabetes. You can find Dr. Christofides online at endocrinology-associates.com. For more information on this topic, check out my book, The Type 2 Diabetes Sourcebook for Women, available on Amazon. You can also check out my book called The Skinny on Fat, which is all about obesity, also available on Amazon. Next week, we look at another women's health topic, which we touched on in the show, hirsutism in women, also known as excessive hair growth in women. Our guest will be Dr. Ricardo Aziz, Director of the Center for Androgen-Related Disorders at Cedars-Sinai Medical Center. Also joining us will be Patsy Kirby, Executive Director of the American Electrology Association. You can visit me online at sarahhealth.com, and remember, you are not alone.
Thank you for listening to Sarah Health Radio. To contact Dr. Rosenthal or one of her guests for more information, visit sarahhealth.com. Tune in next Thursday for another hour of Sarah Health Radio with Dr. Sarah Rosenthal.